Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
Cloudy start, going to be a cloudy day today. Highs only at 57, so it might even feel a little cooler than it did yesterday, although the temperature is going to be a little bit warmer. Then a chance for showers comes in later on tonight around 10 o'clock, lingers into tomorrow, clears out by Friday. Highs of 64, then warms to 68 on Saturday. Then the real cold front comes through, and we're talking highs on Monday of only 40 degrees with freeze warnings for the North Shore and maybe even the South Shore, and maybe a wintry mix of snow or ice or something on Tuesday, but they'll have to watch that. It's all about the timing. Bruce Jenelson joins us now, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University. Our good friend previously worked in the State Department on a Middle East peace process. Bruce, good morning. Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to you as well, Tommy.
And I don't know if I spoke to you enough, but we really do value your time because you're not just in an ivory tower. You worked with these people. You know how it works in Washington and in the Middle East, and you were involved in all of this. Take us back, Bruce, if you can, for some context, because so much has happened since October of 2023, I guess it was, right?
Yeah, that was a real turning point. You know, back in the 90s, there were some breakthroughs. The Israelis and Palestinians started moving towards peace agreements, kicked off by the Norwegians, but then led by the Americans, and a lot of on and off over the years. And there'd been some, I'll call them small wars between Israel and Gaza, but this is of a totally different scale. You know, on October 7th, more Jews were killed than in any single day since the Nazi Holocaust. Very, traumatic for Israel. And then the war that Israel's launched since then, death tolls are in the 45,000. Some are Hamas fighters, but an awful lot are civilians. And, it's made a huge humanitarian crisis there, as well as the Israelis still being, I have friends in Israel who, talking to the other day, and at 3 in the morning, they're getting sirens because of rocket attacks from the Houthis in Yemen, still from the Palestinians. So both sides, you don't want to compare suffering. Who's more, both sides are suffering.
Bruce, I wanted to say this, and I forgot initially when I knew you were coming on, but I forgot it when you came on, and that is talk about, now that Jimmy Carter's funeral is over and the flags are at half-staff, that's going to change. That's a story for another day. But talk about the importance of what he accomplished with Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin, I think it was, right?
Yeah, it was a peace agreement between Israel and Egypt, the very first peace agreement since Israel was founded in 1948 between Israel and an Arab country. And look, we're almost 50 years later, and it stood up. I mean, that's a pretty good record, for anywhere in the world, let alone the Middle East. And there have been a lot of tensions between Israel and Egypt. Egypt is, obviously not happy with what Israel's been doing in Gaza and a variety of other issues. And, all presidents have, strengths and weaknesses. There are some parts of Carter's foreign policy that people are critical of. But the breakthrough there was this human touch he had. There's this story, and if you go to the Carter Center in Atlanta, he has the letters posted there, where it was about to break up. The two leaders were angry with each other. And he went to each one at Camp David, each had their own cabin, and he said, let's talk about our grandkids, right? Let's talk about not just our current politics, but the future. And, Israel signed a peace treaty with Jordan in 1994. That stood up now for 30 years. But Egypt, long had been the most powerful country in the Middle East, and so that's a huge achievement. And without that, things would be even worse than they are today.
And Anwar Sadat paid for that with his life, did he not?
He did, and a couple of years later, he was assassinated by some extremists in his own country at a military parade, and he paid for it with his own life. And, you know, Sadat was also someone, and Begin. Begin was, you know, call it a very right-wing radical when Israel was founded, and even opposed some of the deals that Israel's first president and prime minister, David Ben-Gurion, made. And Sadat had also been a military commander who'd fought Israel in 1973, you know, just like Yitzhak Rabin, you know, in the 1990s. Some of these, when you've been a military person and you know the risk and costs of war, it sometimes makes you more oriented to trying to find peace. And that's what happened with Sadat.
We're going to take a break and pick it up with the current situation when we return. But the reason I brought that up, it's all about context. And if, say, a guy like Netanyahu was president, there is no way he would have negotiated a peace term with Egypt. What do you think?
No. You know, right now, Netanyahu, frankly, he's trying to stay in office because he faces some serious prosecution for his own alleged criminal offenses. And, you know, many people in Israel, including, you know, people that are top former military officials, the former head of the Shin Bet, one of their big spy agencies, has said this war needs to end, not just because of the humanitarian toll for Gaza, but because for Israel's interests. And Netanyahu very much, and he's you know, totally beholden to this extreme group on his right wing that not only want to, you know, get rid of the Palestinians, but want to change Israeli society so that they impose their ultra version of Judaism on the rest of Israel. So, you know, he's thinking real more about himself and his country, frankly, in my view.
Is it accurate, Bruce, to say before we go to the break that both Begin and Sadat expended a lot of political capital to try to bring peace to the region, and Sadat ultimately expended his life to bring peace to the region, trying to do what was in the best interest of everybody?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Begin, you know, survived a few years later. He stayed prime minister for a few years after that and then had some other issues and problems. But he had to come back and tell the people who were his extremists, you know, that he didn't cave, you know, he didn't go soft. He did what was in the best interest of the country. And so it didn't cost him his life. It did cost Yitzhak Rabin, the Israeli leader in the 1990s, his life. Same thing, assassinated by somebody who was a ultra extremist. But you know, that's what leadership is all about. You know, seeing the big picture, seeing the future. You know, playing the politics the best you can, but not making them the determining force when you see there's a better way for your country and your people.
And I just want to make that point because I don't know if that exists in 2025 or not, or we'll see. We'll talk more about the agreement when we come back. 722 Traffic Now, WWL. Back with Bruce Jennelson, our friend, director of a professor of public policy and political science at Duke University, previously worked in the State Department on the Middle East peace process. Before we get to, and we only have a little bit of time left, instead of focusing on the details of this, because that's likely to change, I'd rather focus on a process, Bruce, because you got a new president being inaugurated on January 26th. Who's negotiating this, and how binding is whatever deal they come up with after January 20th?
Yeah, they're talking about they're close to a deal on the hostages and ceasefire. I know the Biden people have been coordinating with the Trump people on this, you know, whatever the other tensions are between the presidents and the transition teams. And it may well be the combination of the work the Biden people have done and some pressure from President-elect Trump, including, by the way, on Netanyahu, because Trump wants a deal. And if Hamas is cooperative and Netanyahu is not, then while he supports Netanyahu in other ways, he may pressure him. So there seems to be some coordination. It's not like the Biden people are doing this and not coordinating with the Trump people, at least on this issue.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
When it comes to Carter, going back to him, does Biden have any part of the here's what I'm trying to say in my own clumsy way in a minute that we have left. Bruce, we all know that Iran refused to release the hostages until Reagan was sworn in, right? That was their last shot at Jimmy Carter, if I remember history correctly. And I just wonder, does any of that play into this with Biden or not?
You know, I think it does. I think Trump would like a deal like Reagan's, and he can say, and you know, he'll claim all the credit. The Biden people may claim the credit. My sense is if there's a deal, the credit is really because of the two of them. And even on the hostage deal, I mean, part of the, you know, frustration of Carter was there was a lot of stuff going on before the election where the Reagan people were telling the Iranians, don't make a deal, we'll make a better deal with you, we'll lift the grain embargo. So we'll get more details, you know, if there is a deal. But I'm afraid it's another one of these Charlie Brown and Lucy and the football things, and it may be pulled out at the 11th hour.
And when it comes to history being ugly, Nixon did put off the Vietnam peace negotiations for re-election. That's a fact, is it not?
It is absolutely a fact, yes.
Thank you. Appreciate your time, Bruce. Sometimes history is an ugly thing, but it is true. Bruce Gentleson, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University, previously worked in the State Department on the Middle East peace process. Not trying to take a shot at Nixon, just reminding everybody that the truth is sometimes an inconvenient thing, and you can't just let it go away because you don't want to hear it. We'll come back, talk about the homeless situation in New Orleans right now. 7:30 on a button, time for WWL First News. 7:46, 14 till 8 on this chilly Wednesday morning. It'll be cloudy today, too, so it may actually feel a bit colder than it was yesterday, what with no sunshine and so forth. A chance for rain tonight that extends into tomorrow. Highs of 59, then clear on Friday, or at least partly cloudy. Highs of 64, warmer on Saturday in advance of a cold front. Then it really does turn cold, and you heard Peyton Malone talk about maybe a wintry mix on Tuesday. And if it does snow and the kids are in school, let them go out and play in it. I know my kid was in school one of the years it snowed, and they forced them to sit inside and watch. And you know they're not paying attention to anything that's going on. Just let them go out and play in the snow. All right, we're talking about the move by Governor Jeff Landry to open that facility at 5601 France Road. The efforts to move the homeless is underway. Joe Heron Mueller joins us now, Director of Community Engagement for Unity of Greater New Orleans, to talk about it. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm all right. How are you this morning?
I'm okay. Let me say this. Yesterday, and I'll stand up to what I said. Yesterday, I said nothing is perfect. There is no perfect solution. It seemed like the governor may be on the right track here because he's not dispersing people. He's keeping them in one location. There are details to be worked out after talking to Leslie Harris, you know, with getting the working homeless to their jobs, to medical appointments, et cetera. And I don't know about ending it after Mardi Gras, but tell me, am I wrong on any of this, or your thoughts as to the governor's plan, and then we'll go from there. And I'm not trying to argue. I'm just saying, as a guy who's just an observer, it would seem like it's not a terrible idea. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that, you know, when we're looking at homelessness, we need quick solutions can be very appealing, but we need to make sure that we're staying focused, especially as a coordinator of homeless service providers across Orleans and Jefferson Parish, on the long view. What do we need to do to really effectively address homelessness, not just today, but in the long haul? And to that end, you know, we need to have a dialogue with the governor and his staff. We need to be working in partnership with the city and service providers to find proven and cost-effective solutions. That really means permanent housing for those who are working. Often, if they're experiencing homelessness, they need a little bit of support, a few months of rental assistance to get back on their feet. If they're folks like many of the folks in our city who have been homeless for long periods of time, they need permanent rental assistance because their disabilities are the major contributing factor to their homelessness. So we have solutions like that. We've been working on those types of solutions, and it is very effective. However, you know, new people fall into homelessness because housing costs are very high. Anybody who's got a rental payment or a mortgage knows that. That said, in the short term, shelter, low barrier shelter that is voluntary, that is respects the dignity and rights of the people who are there, can be effective at helping facilitate an end to homelessness through housing. It's not the solution, but it can be part of an approach that is effective.
So, ideally, what would you like to see? What would Unity's? Tell you what, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. All right. I just noticed the time. We got to look at traffic. We're talking to Joe Heron Mueller, Director of Community Engagement for Unity of Greater New Orleans. I mentioned my thoughts about the governor's plan and what happens from here and my concerns and some things that needed to be hashed out. And when we come back, we'll see what Joe thinks and Unity of Greater New Orleans, ideally, if they could come up with the plan and get it funded, what it would look like. 7:50, 10 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:56, 4 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Joe Heron Mueller, Director of Community Engagement for Unity of Greater New Orleans, about the governor's plan that is underway and people are being relocated to the center on France Road, warehouse on France Road, however you want to describe it. I asked you before the break, Joe, in Unity of Greater New Orleans' eyes, what would the perfect plan be? Because it's hard, or the best plan be. It's hard to come up with anything that's perfect. But ideally, if you could write the script, what would it look like to solve the homeless situation in New Orleans, or at least deal with it?
Well, yeah, you know, we have to work with whatever the situation is right now, not in an ideal world. Mm-hmm. So, but I think that optimally, you want to work to navigate people who fall into homelessness as rapidly as possible. We have a situation now where there are many people who are unsheltered and who are living in various parts of the city. You have to have outreach workers that are competent and that are engaged with folks and that are building trust. And you need shelters that flow, where people can go into a shelter, get short-term assistance, and quickly move out of that shelter into permanent housing because there are units available and vouchers available to help them get that. That's something that we've been working on with our partners at the City of New Orleans in Jefferson Parish. Making sure that folks who are experiencing homelessness across our community, whether they're unaccompanied adults or whether they're families with children, have options. We're moving forward with the transitional center. We've got to make sure that when folks get in there and that there's a plan for them to get out, that there are housing slots available, that they're being connected and navigated to affordable, secure, quality housing in our community. Because by and large, the folks who experience homelessness in our community are from our community. These are New Orleanians. These are folks who are local and have fallen into homelessness. By and large, we are not talking about folks who have traveled to New Orleans from somewhere else to experience homelessness. It's really not to say that never happens, but it is by far the outlier of situations. So that's what we need to have. And we need to have continued wraparound services to make sure that people don't fall back into homelessness. And we have good success with that. Over the last 15 months we have been working in partnership on an unsheltered initiative with the city and Travelers Aid and other partners, we've housed on average 100 people a month. That's not just people from the street, but that's people across all situations of homelessness. Unity and our partners have housed on average 100 people a month over the last 15 months, and 822 of them, I believe, were housed through the city's unsheltered initiative.
Thank you. We're out of time. Joe, I appreciate your time. I really do, and your insights. And we'll talk to you again because this is not going to go away anytime soon. Joe Herron-Mueller, Director of Community Engagement for Unity of Greater New Orleans. We'll talk to Eugene Green, New Orleans City Council member. We come back about the same thing.